might as well cut it. Tell us what you know, Kev.
Okay.
What can we do?
Let me see where does 2 Samuel start?
Right after 1st. It's sequential, Kev.
Uh-huh. I meant, like, where does 1 Samuel end and such?
I believe it's right around the time David becomes king.
Okay. So, David is a young shepherd, and the prophet of God comes and says, "You're going to be king." And then he leaves. But he doesn't say when he's going to do it or anything like that. Meanwhile, the king at the time, Saul, is not doing a very good job. So David, you probably know the story of David and Goliath. David kills Goliath and then becomes essentially Saul's right-hand man. Saul kind of goes a little crazy and thinks that David is just out to usurp his throne, take over for him. And so David runs away, and Saul chases after him for how many years?
Long time.
Long time. Many, many years. David's out in the wilderness. He's hiding. He gets a bunch of guys together who are with him in the wilderness. They become like his little army, but he's not going after Saul. He just is trying to protect himself and build relationships and things. So eventually Saul is killed. And it's a little hazy where David comes in with that one, that he...
David becomes king.
Yeah, David eventually becomes king, and just doing really well as king up until he starts making some mistakes, and then some of the people under him and his sons and different people...
He also has many wives by this point. Wives.
Yeah.
Which is problematic.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of kids. And so so where we're at right now, where are we at right now?
David has a son. Well, David makes a... Well, a lot of this has to do with what's happening now. It started when David sinned. David becomes... the king, he has a lot of power. He has a pretty good heart. Actually, it says he's the best man. God searched the land, and he was the best possible man to be king. Always remember that, because when you start to hear about his sin, remember, he's the best possible man. So that says something about everybody else and about us. So David becomes king, and there's a sin in particular where he has an adulterous affair with the wife of one of his... officers in his army, Bathsheba. She becomes pregnant to David, and David tries to fluff this off onto Uriah the Hittite, who is the husband. He tries to bring him home to sleep with his wife so that it wouldn't be him, so the guy would think it was his own kid. Well, this guy's such a good guy that he refuses to sleep with his wife because his fellow soldiers are out in the field. He said, "I won't do that," and David's like, "Ooh." So David has him killed in battle. He sends to Joab, who is Joab's sort of the foil in this entire thing. Joab is a relative of David, and Joab is his army general. Consider him the number two man, the man with the club. And so he sends a message to Joab to have Uriah killed. Put him in the front of the battle and then retreat. And let so we didn't do it, you know, that whole idea of, well, they killed him, we didn't do it. Mm. God sees this. God's to whom much is given, much is expected. Because of this, the prophet Nathan shows up and points a finger at David and said, "You did this, and because you've done this," and he tells David a story. And in this story, he's, you know, about a landowner who steals a sheep from this poor guy next to him so he could feed a friend. And David gets really angry, and he says he should die for this, but he should pay a penalty 4 times over. Mm. Well, then Nathan says, "It was you, David. You did this." Mm. Well, we're working our way through Nathan's, because Nathan said, "This is what's going to happen to you. The sword will never leave your house." David pays for this sin until he dies. 4 of his children, 4 of his sons die. When David's the one who said he should pay fourfold, well, it starts with the baby who dies at birth. And where we're at now is we're working our way through David establishing his kingdom, David becoming powerful, and then David's son, Absalom. Well, another of his sons raped one of his daughters. So Absalom, another of his sons, kills the other son, so that's two sons down. And Absalom then revolts against David, chases him out of the country. He crosses over the Jordan. Then David eventually comes back because Joab, the same guy before, kills Absalom in battle. It's David's son, so that's David's third dead son. And Absalom actually stuck his hair in a tree and was hanging from his hair, and Joab just comes up and runs him through. Even though David had specifically said, do not kill him. Joab has a problem, and this is right where we are. Absalom has just been killed by Joab. Joab has just been killing people left and right. He has no qualms about killing people. He killed Uriah. He didn't, you know, there was no objection from him. Put Uriah in the front, kill him. Okay. You know, and he killed Absalom. He killed Abner, who he was not supposed to kill, if you remember. And he's not done killing people yet. So this is right where we're picking up. Absalom has just died, which is a huge victory for David. I mean, David has been chased out of Jerusalem. Absalom had moved in. Absalom went up onto the roof and had relations with his 10 concubines on the same roof where he spotted Bathsheba, which is not by coincidence. And where we are now is they've just won the victory. Absalom's dead. Mm. And that's where we're picking up at chapter 19. So this is... Good.
Sorry, and another son of David is Solomon.
Right? Yes. He had a bunch of sons, right. Okay. And a bunch of daughters because he had a bunch of wives. And it didn't work out well for him that he had all these daughters and wives. And it just... This reads, honestly, this is... David is extremely politically savvy. He can see three or four moves down the road. He doesn't let his emotion usually govern his decisions. He governs his... If you guys ever saw the movie The Godfather, how Vito Corleone always just made his it's business. You know, you make a move because it's business, not because of you're mad, not because... And this was David. David would see down the road and see who he needed to be aligned with, and he would do the right political move. This reads just like The Godfather. I mean, there is plots, subplots, there's scheming going on. And it's anywhere there's power, this is what happens. Solomon has not come in yet. He comes in very shortly. I believe that's Bathsheba's other child, is Solomon. Mm. And actually his fourth son dies because of Solomon in a battle between Solomon and the fourth son. So that's how it comes. That's yet to come. But so this is where we pick up. Absalom's dead. Joab kills him. Then it was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourns for Absalom. So the people come to Joab and say, hey, David's in mourning, yet there's this great victory. It's like, remember the celebration, Times Square photo when, you know, the war ended in World War II? That's what should be happening right now. This is huge. But David's not even coming out. I mean, he's in the house crying. The victory that day has turned to mourning for all the people. For the people heard it and said, the king is grieved for his son. So the people went by stealth into the city that day, as the people who are humiliated steal away when they flee in battle. So what they're saying is, they want a great victory, but because David isn't there, and because David's mourning, the people are like sulking into the city, not as a celebration, not with, you know, tambourines and all that stuff. It's like they lost. And they had risked their lives. I mean, this could have went either way. So the people who are loyal with David, when you win, you expect something out of it. And they're not getting it. This is a bad situation. This is politically a bad situation. The king covered his face and cried out with a loud voice, my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son. It's a tough situation. He is the king, but he's also a father. And if you have children, you could surely understand David's dilemma. Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants, who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, by loving those who hate you and by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. This is pretty harsh stuff. Once again, I tell you, Joab is a very powerful man. He is the thumper. He is the muscle in the whole thing. And he, remember, he's David's relative. I mean, he's known David since David was a child. This probably no one else could have got away with saying these things. I would almost guarantee you that no, there's no one else in the kingdom that could have walked in and said these things to David and lived. But it is what it is. And so he tells them, "Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you. And this will be worse for you than all the evils that have come up for you from your youth until now." And that's a lot of evils, if you will remember back. All the stuff he went through, living in caves, being betrayed, having spears thrown at him. I mean, just horrible stuff. And what he's saying is, and Joab's right. And what he's saying is, if you don't do something, you're going to be done here. Because the people aren't going to put up with this. So the king arose and sat in the gate. When they told the people, saying, "Behold, the king is sitting in the gate," then all the people came before the king. Now Israel fled, each to his tent. Okay, a couple things. Sitting at the gate, that's like reviewing the troops. It's also, if you remember, if you know anything about the Old Testament, the gate is that public place where public things get done. Judgments are passed. If people have, remember Absalom sat at the gate and was answering, people were bringing complaints, and he goes, "Oh, don't go to the king, because the king won't treat you right. I will." Remember Absalom sat at the gate? Because these things get done at the gate. It's the place where he should be. You know, it's that public square. For us, it would be the public square. And so he's sitting there. Now he's out there. Now all the people are catching sight of it. It's lifting their spirits. You know, we did the right thing. The king's happy. You know, we risk our lives for a purpose. Now it says, "Now Israel fled, each to his tent." Remember, Israel has two meanings. There's the nation Israel. Then there's Israel, the northern part of the kingdom. Specifically, the tribe of Benjamin, specifically Saul's tribe. That has been going on. If you remember, this little war, inner conflict, has been going on between the tribe of Benjamin and David since David took the throne, because it's Saul's people. So what happens is, the people who were with Absalom, Israel, they left. So there's, what it's saying is there's no more conflict. The battle's over. Nobody's saying this shouldn't happen. There's nobody there, you know, everybody's celebrating. The people who were with Absalom just went away. And they're either dead or they're gone. "Then all the people were quarreling throughout the tribes of Israel, saying, 'The king delivered us from the hands of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines. But now he's fled out into the land from Absalom. However, Absalom, whom we've appointed over us, has died in battle. Now then, why are you silent about bringing the king back?'" So there's still this, we don't know what to do moment. The people aren't really jumping on the wagon. This is just a recount. This is what the people are saying. Okay, David saved us many times from the Philistines. Then he had to flee from Absalom. Now he's back. What do we do? And it's that political uncertainty that happens. "Then David sent Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, saying, 'Speak to the elders of Judah.'" Judah is David's people, if you remember. That's the southern kingdom, the southern half of Israel. "Why are you the last to bring the king back into his house, since the word of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? You are my brothers, you are bone of my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring the king back?" If you remember, Absalom went down to Judah. If you remember, he went down with this procession. He had runners out in front of him, and he had all this pomp and circumstance as if he was the king, and the people accept him down there. That's how he turned Judah. He basically tricked them. And Amasa was his general. When he turned him, that turned, he got one of the most important people in Judah to go to his side, which turned Judah. So David says, let's settle this business with Judah right now. The people in Jerusalem, he's fine with. Israel's in the north, Judah's in the south. This needs to be pulled together politically. Everybody needs to be united. And so what David is doing is he's taking care of political business. He says, all right, let's fix what's wrong. Now, this is really interesting, because most of the time in these cases, The people who turned on you get their heads cut off, and they die horrible, gruesome deaths. David, just like the Godfather, you know, this is business. And whatever's best for business is what I'm going to do. It has nothing to do with my emotion. Amasa was the general for Absalom. He was fighting against David. And David says, say to Amasa, are you not bone of my flesh? May God do so to me and also more, if you will not be commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. Whoa, that is huge. I mean, that is, Joab just won the war for him. But what did Joab do? Joab killed Absalom when he told him not to. And that is not the first person. He killed Abner, and he killed Absalom after being told both times not to. He just came in and just tore into the king with no respect whatsoever. So what David does is something really powerful here. He makes a huge move. The general that was just fighting against him, he says, come back to me, and I'll make you the general in place of Joab. Now, from what we know of Joab, he's not going to take this well. He doesn't take anything well. But it's a very big move, and it has repercussions that are powerful because Amasa has huge power down in the south. He just controls there. It's a political move. And it does two things. It unites him with Judah, and it cuts the power of Joab, which needs cut. So it's a really brilliant move.
I don't understand the sentence, may God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if from now on you are not. Like, is he just saying?
It's an oath.
Okay.
That's all it is. Saying if I don't, he has to make an oath because Amasa's not going to believe him. Amasa's looking to be killed.
Okay, so he's saying,
I promise, I swear to you, this is what's going to happen. Because remember, he had just been fighting against him.
Right.
So this is a big move. Thus he turned the hearts of all the men of Judah as one man. So it worked. So that they sent word to the king saying, return, you and all your servants. The king then returned and came as far as the Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal and ordered to meet the king to bring the king across the Jordan. If you will remember, David was hiding across the Jordan over on the eastern bank at, Mahanaim. Mahanaim is that place where everybody runs to when they're being, it's where Saul went, and it's where David went. Mahanaim is over this side of the Jordan. He's working his way back, and all these things are being put into motion. This is like David is settling all accounts on his way back. Jerusalem is on this side of the Jordan. David's on this side. So before David gets across, Judah comes up to greet him and say, you're the king. We'll help you cross. Now the Jordan, I mean, it's not like the Monongahela down here. Maybe 75 feet wide to 200 feet wide. But maybe 3 to 12 feet deep. So wherever it's shallow is where people cross, but it's still an event to cross it because you're vulnerable. When you're crossing that river, you really can't protect yourself. So there's sort of like there's something to it crossing the river. It means something. You're protecting the king while he's crossing, and it's symbolic, but it's also pragmatic, crossing the Jordan. Okay, but what he's doing is he's going back to Jerusalem. And Judah's coming up into Israel's territory to bring him back. So, and we know how Israel and Judah get along. So, which actually in a very short while, they split into two kingdoms. The northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And you'll read that in 1 and 2 Kings. Different, you know, it always gets confusing who the prophets are and where they are and where the kings are. It's because there's two kingdoms. One king's the king up here, another king's the king down there. Each one has its own prophet. And it's kind of tough to keep in your mind who's who here. So anyway, they come up. The king returned as far as the Jordan. Judah came from Gilgal in order to meet the king and bring the king across the Jordan. Then Shimei, remember Shimei? I remember who Shimei is. Shimei is from the tribe of Benjamin, which, once again, is Saul's tribe. Remember, the feelings run deep. They don't like David because David deposed, took the place. When Saul died, David stepped in, even though David was Saul's son-in-law, which, you know, the king tried to have his wife kill him, but David is not of that tribe. Benjamin still wants one of Saul's descendants to sit on the throne so that they can have standing. It's a political move for them. You know, it's, you know, we're friends with the king. Shimei was the guy who, when David was leaving Jerusalem before Absalom was killed, they're on that long, I mean, all the generals and his army and his family, they're all with him, and he's the guy that came by and started to curse David. You know, as you're a murderer, you're a killer, and he just was just berating David as David rode by. And one of David's generals says, let me go kill him. Why are we listening to this? And David said, no. If the Lord told him to speak, I'm not going to stop him. So he follows David along for a good while, berating the king because he thinks he's going to lose. He thinks the king's going to lose. Now the tables have turned. David's coming back this way. Shimei says to himself, I'm in trouble. You know, I'm sure he remembers me calling him names and saying, you should die and you're a murderer. So the Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him. So he brings 1,000 guys with him. And he says, with Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul. Ziba, if you remember, let's try to catch up, was Saul's servant. So he's still friends with this Shimei. They're tight. But he was the guy who David put in charge of Saul's stuff for Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is Jonathan's son. Jonathan, if you'll remember, is Saul's son who was really good friends with David. You know, he was willing to give up his throne, his claim to the throne for David. Both died in battle, Saul and Jonathan. But before Jonathan died, him and David made a pact, and he said, David, if you become king and I should die, take care of my family. And David swore to him, I will. So Jonathan had a crippled child who crippled. They tried to run away from the invaders, and then the maid fell on his feet and broke his feet, and he grew up crippled. David found out about this, and remembering his oath to Jonathan, he said to Ziba, who was Saul's servant, I want you to take care of all this land for Mephibosheth, which was probably, when you think about it, a bad move. It could have been done better, which put resentment in Ziba. Says, okay, so him and his entire family, their job was to make wealth for Mephibosheth. Yet they were pretty high up in Saul's entourage. So this was, while David was trying to bless Jonathan's son, he insulted Ziba, is what he did, bottom line. So, and Mephibosheth didn't ask for any of this. So when David was leaving, if you will recall, Ziba had said that Mephibosheth had turned on him and was following Absalom, which he was not doing at all. He lied because he wanted the land for himself. He felt he'd been cheated, and I want the land. So the two guys that are there with 1,000 troops are the guy who insulted him and the guy who lied about Mephibosheth. And remember, this is a time of reckoning. The guy that they had screwed around a little bit is now coming back the winner.
Did David know that Ziba lied?
Not yet. Oh, okay. It's coming right now. Okay. That's why he's there. He knows what's going to happen. He wants to get there first and tell his side. You know, when you're in trouble, you want to go tell your story first? Well, this is what's happening. Should he have been given more? Yeah, probably. To have him and his entire family serve Mephibosheth when he obviously felt he should have got more? Probably. But Ziba, with the servant of the house of Saul and his 15 sons and 20 servants with him, they rushed to the Jordan to meet the king. They want to get there first and tell their story before anybody else shows up and says what really happens. Then they kept crossing the ford to bring over the king's household and to do what was good in his sight. So what they're doing is they're helping. Oh, let us bring your family over, you know. We'll do that, you know. And, you know. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. So he said to the king, "Let not my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong on the day when my lord the king came out of Jerusalem, so that the king would take it to heart. For his servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I have come today, the first of all the house of Joseph," that's the family he's from, "to go down to meet my lord the king." This is just that he can't lie about anything. I mean, he did it out in public. "I was wrong. I'm sorry. Don't kill me," is basically what's happening here. And he basically throws himself on the mercy of David. Now, he's there with 1,000 guys from Benjamin. David has always had trouble with the tribe of Benjamin. David knows this. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, "Should not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" This is the second time one of David's people, high up people, said, "Kill him. This guy should be killed." David then said, "What have I to do with you, O son of Zeruiah, that you should this day be an advisory to me? Should any man be put to death in Israel today? For do I not know that I am the king over Israel today?" This is kind of cool. What he's saying to him is, listen, we're not killing anybody today. It's a great moment. I'm not worried anymore. I know I'm the king. I don't have to prove it. I don't have to kill him to prove it. I know I'm the king. I won. What he's saying is, I won. I'm not going to put the boots to anybody. This is what made David a great king. His political savvy, even if it's part of his heart, which we will see it's probably not. It's probably just a good political move, because remember, he's from Benjamin. He's tied to the house of Saul. David has always had trouble with Benjamin. So when David forgives him, there's 1,000 people from Benjamin who see it. This makes David's reign a little more secure. David forgoes his emotion for political gain. Once again, Vito Corleone right here. It's business. And he says, the king said to Shimei, "You shall not die." Thus the king swore to him. I may have mentioned it last time, but do remember, the reason I say that this probably wasn't his heart is because we will see in 1 Kings when David is dying and he's on his deathbed, he calls Solomon over and he's given Solomon advice, and he tells Solomon two things: kill Shimei and kill Joab. Take care of both of them. So, apparently, he hadn't totally forgiven him. That's why I consider this more a political move than anything. So, it's when... And he said, also said, "I will not kill you." Well, tell Solomon to do it. He said, "Oh, before I leave, here's what I want you to do. Kill that dude. That jerk that come down and yelled at me. Go kill him." So, and he says, "Okay, Pop." Then, okay, so that's taken care of. Then Mephibosheth, the son of Saul... He's not the son of Saul, but he's in the family of Saul. Mephibosheth is Jonathan's son. Came down to meet the king, and he had neither cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor worth his clothes, from the day the king departed until the day he came home in peace. In other words, he was in mourning. It's not because he couldn't, it's because he's in mourning. It was when he came from Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" In other words, he's saying to him, "Dude, you turned on me. You know, you could have come with me, and you decided not to." And Mephibosheth says to him, because remember, he had been told by Ziba that Ziba that he had turned on him. Ziba lied. So, here's the moment. Ziba's here, Mephibosheth is here, so Ziba's going to have to face up to what he's done. My lord the king, my servant deceived me, Ziba. Remember, he put Ziba as his servant to take care of all the land from Mephibosheth. And that goes, but if you check chapter 16, 1 through 4, that's where this happened. And he said, your servant said, "I will saddle a donkey for myself, that I might ride on it and go with the king, because your servant is lame." When he's saying your servant, he's saying to David, your servant, me, is lame. So what he's saying is, Ziba said that I'll go with the king, you stay here. But when he went with the king, he said, Ziba turned on you. Moreover, he has slandered your servant to the Lord the king. But my Lord the king is like the angel of God. therefore do what is good in your sight. In other words, he's going, you know what, you're a really smart guy, you'll figure it out, whatever you want to do is fine with me. He has no apologies, he comes, he tells the truth. Mephibosheth is a really neat study. He's just a really cool man. Lord took care of him through the whole thing. Takes care of him again in the coming up in the future. He says, for all my father's household was nothing but dead men before my lord the king. What he's saying is, Saul's house was at war against you, and everybody died but me. You saved me. David pulled him out of poverty and brought him into his palace, and he lived with David because of Jonathan. And he's saying, I recognize what you've done for me. I know what you've done for me, and I know you could have rightly killed me because my house was trying to kill you. And I am also a threat to you for the kingship because I'm in Saul's line. So think about all that, and David still brings him in. Yet you set your servant among those who ate at your own table. What right do I have yet that I should complain any more to the king? So the king said to him, why do you still speak of your affairs? I have decided, you and Ziba shall divide the land. Probably, in my opinion, what should have been done in the first place? So David says, what he's saying is, why do you still speak? He says, stop, don't worry about it. I'm going to, you know, you have nothing, don't worry, is what he's saying to him. You don't need to explain anything any further. Here's what I'm going to do. You can question whether David knows what he's doing. The reason for me, politically, is Ziba still has power in Benjamin. David is solving some Benjamin problems right here. He doesn't kill Shimei. He doesn't punish Ziba. He actually gives him half the estate, which he probably should have done in the first place. And he surely treats Mephibosheth extremely well, too. The people of Benjamin are going, hey, we're okay. You know, everything's good. And he says, you shall divide the land. Mephibosheth said to the king, and this is one of those cool little parts in scripture where you see somebody's heart that you could remember this one. Remember this one because this is just a fascinating human being. Said to the king, let him even take it all, since my lord the king has come home safely to his own house. Everybody's there trying to get something. Everybody's there trying to make a political move. Mephibosheth just wants to set it straight. I didn't turn on you. It's all I want you to know. I don't want anything from you. I just want you to know I'm glad you're back. And when he says that, I mean, it carries weight. You know, no, that's just give it all to him. It's not worth it to me. Which is a really cool moment. I'm not sure we know what David actually did or didn't do. But David took care of him. But purity of heart, somewhere in this political quagmire of this. If you've ever been involved in local politics or politics at all, you can see how heavy. Sometimes it just feels so heavy because there's power there. It's not politics, it's power that causes these problems. And sometimes it can feel so thick and dark and heavy. And in the middle of all this thick and darkness and everybody jockeying to get something because power has changed, there's this guy just says, hey, I'm just glad you're my friend and I'm glad you're back. This purity of heart that just shines in one verse through the middle of all this yuck, you know, that David lives in. And, you know, and I'll say this about politics. If you are not praying for your political leaders, don't complain about them. That's part of your job, is to pray for them. Because it, you know, knowing what little I know from being in the police department and being president of the union and dealing with political matters and being involved in these things, I would not want to do it. And anyone who does it, I appreciate them, that does it with a decent heart. I know how hard it is. No matter what you do, people complain about it. There's very little reward. But if you're not praying for your political leaders, don't complain about them. Honestly, because that's our job. You know, put them before the Lord, that the Lord give them wisdom, and put people in their path that should be there. Then it goes on. So Shimei's been dealt with, Amasa's been dealt with, and Mephibosheth and Ziba's been dealt with. These are all things that needed dealt with. Now, Barzillai, the Gileadite, had come down from Rogalim, and he went on the Jordan with the king to escort him over the Jordan. Now, this is the old dude that when David was running away from Absalom, he's a powerful guy. he comes down with all these supplies and just food, cares for David's family, gives them food, gives them wine, takes care of them, brings them in. Now he's over on this side of Jordan. He's in, going back to the analogy of the Godfather, it's like he went into some other Don's territory and that Don took care of him. You know, he ran away from his son and in somebody else's territory he was taken care of. And this is the guy who took care of him. So he comes down for David's triumphant entry before he crosses the Jordan, because they're still on his side of the Jordan. They're still on Brasilia's, even sounds like something from The Godfather. They're still on his side of the Jordan. Now, Brasilia was very old, being 80 years old, and he had sustained the king while he stayed at Mananiam, which is the place where everybody runs away to when they're in trouble. For he was a very great man. The king said to Barzillai, "You cross over with me, and I will sustain you in Jerusalem with me." But Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I yet to live that I should go up with you, up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? Or can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or how can I hear any more the voices of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be added to the burden of my lord the king?" What he's saying to him is, "Hey, thanks, buddy. But you know what, dude, I'm 80 years old." Any reason that people would go with him is to get these things. It's a party. I mean, it's you're just taken care of. It's you're living in the palace, great food, entertainment, the whole thing. And what this old dude says is, "I'm too old to enjoy it. You know, just, I'm good. I'm just glad you're back." So there are some really neat people that show up here because he's offering them a very sweet thing. It's like, just come on up, you'll be taken care of, you don't have to do anything anymore, you are going to live in the lap of luxury for the rest of your life. And the dude says, "No, thank you." And he says, "Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me for this reward?" And he's being very humble here. He says, "Well, you're going to give me all this just for crossing the river with you?" And it wasn't what it was for. It was for taking care of him when David could have lost. He sided with David when things were still in flux. He made a choice, and he chose David when choices were to be made. And David remembered it. It's not because he's crossing over, but he's just being humble. He says, "You're going to give me all this just because I'm crossing a river with you. Please let your servant return, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother." And what he says, "I just want to go home, you know, and live out my life and be with my people and die where my folks died. However, here is your servant, Chimam. Let him cross over with the Lord the king and do for him what is good in your sight." Most likely his son. So what he's saying is, "Listen, all these things you're going to do for me, take care of my kid. You know, if you're going to do something for me." It comes up again, 1 Kings 2:7, his name comes up. And apparently there's a place that's named after him in Jeremiah 41:17. It comes up again. David probably gave him land from his own personal estate. And it becomes known for him, for this Chimam. So David takes care of business. The king answered, "Chimam shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight." David says to Barzillai, "Whatever you require of me, I will do for you." All the people crossed over the Jordan, and the king crossed too. The king then kissed Barzillai and blessed him and returned to his place. Now the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimam went with him, and all the people of Judah. Also, half the people of Israel accompanied the king. So what they're saying is he crossed the river. He's on his way to Jerusalem. He crossed the river, and he's got this collection of people, huge collection of people coming with him. However, it's Israel. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, when I say Israel, northern kingdom, "Why had our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king and his household and all of David's men with him over the Jordan?" This happened once before. They were all jealous. Remember when they went to battle and they said, "Why didn't you call us into battle?" And they got all mad and they were going to fight because they went to battle without them. Remember, it's always the same place. It's always Benjamin and the hill country of Ephraim. Those are the two places where David has trouble. And they look for reasons. So now David crossed the river, and these people, remember, the men of Judah came up to meet David, and they crossed over along with 1,000 men from Benjamin who came with Shimei and Ziba. That's who's in this procession. Now all the other men of Israel come down and say, they're mad because they didn't wait for them or ask them to come to cross the river. And apparently, like I said, crossing the river has great symbolism. Protection, all that, you know, taking care of both sides. So there's a whole lot to that. It's not just crossing a river. There's symbolism here. And they're mad. Well, why did you let Judah do it and not us? They're worried that Judah is getting an inn where they don't have one. They know David's the king. The politics just never stops here. And that's what this is all about. Oh, they're worried because now Judah will have the king's ear and not us. So here they go. Then all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is a close relative to us. Why are you angry about this matter? Have we eaten at the king's expense? Or has anything been taken for us? In other words, what are you mad about? We didn't get anything out of this. You know, we didn't take anything that belonged to you or anything that belonged to the king. But the men of Israel answered the men of Judah, saying, we have 10 parts in the king, 10 tribes in the north, 2 tribes in the south. Therefore, we also have more claim on David than you. Why then did you treat us with contempt? See, they view this river crossing without them as a contemptible move. Was it not our advice first to bring the king back? It was. Then he went down to talk to Judah. Yet the words of the men of Judah were harsher than the words of the men of Israel, and that ends the matter. In other words, they outshouted him. It doesn't end well. So when this thing's over, and Dave just doesn't get any peace. Going all the way back to the sword will never leave your house. He finally has this great victory at the cost of his son. He has to deal with, before he crosses the river, all these people that turned on him or thought he turned on him, and he handles it brilliantly, just brilliantly. Then after he crosses the river, then this big to-do starts between his kingdom. Half of his kingdom his kingdom is splitting in half, is what's happening, before he even gets into Jerusalem. And I think we'll wrap up there, and we'll pick up on 20. Read ahead. It gets very interesting how this turns into something. I mean, something big. And Joab continues to be a major player. Some very harsh and hard things happen. And he just got back. I mean, it just doesn't end. So, you know, if you want to be king, this is what comes with it. This is not an easy job. And, of course, it was made harder by what he's done. I leave you with the verse that says, do not be deceived, God is not mocked. You will reap what you have sown. Your sin will find you out. David is still paying for his sin. How grateful and how fortunate we are to have Jesus Christ to pay that price for us. If you think you can do it by the law, you are condemned to live this life that David is living. How gracious we are, the grace we have received from God to have the law completed through Jesus Christ in us. It's a big lesson. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this time. And we thank you for your word. Let it find a home in our hearts. And when it find that home, Lord, help it to change us so that we could actually be some help to this poor, sad world. Watch over my brothers and sisters. Make them strong, wise, brave, and compassionate. Help them to glorify your name and what you think, do, and say. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Have a great week.